Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, December 2nd, 2014. And with me today, I have my experts in everything audio and legal, Brian Chaffin. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Thanks for having me today, Jeff.
It's awesome to have you here. And Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I am pushing through a head cold, so I sound a little more nasally than usual. But I am otherwise fantastic. Actually, I'm amazing.
I think that that's a license to mess with Dave.
Oh, it definitely is. Yeah, if the last 2 days have been any indication, that's right.
Excellent. And actually, I wouldn't have it any other way. Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully the head cold will go away soon for your sake, because if it doesn't, that gives us more time to mess with you.
Yeah. Just remember, I'll write it all down and then it comes back once I'm better.
Oh.
Well, what I'm hoping is that when you write it down because of whatever drugs you take to make the head cold less, what you're writing down will actually be things like Ms. Bop, blah, blah, and blah, blah, blah.
I didn't realize we were allowed to take drugs at work. I've got to go.
Yeah.
Speaking of
rescue
drugs,
rescue this show here.
Yeah, no problem. I'm totally on it. I'm going to go with the Brian segue. Speaking of drugs, Apple is facing a lawsuit over the iPod.
Yeah. I remember when that was a thing.
Yeah, this is not a new thing, right?
Right. This is an old. This is actually an amalgamation of some 900 different lawsuits, if I remember correctly. It's all started as a suit against Apple in 2005. Dealing with Apple not allowing iTunes Store songs to be played elsewhere. In other words, Apple wouldn't license FairPlay.
Their DRM.
Their DRM, yeah.
Which is ironic that this is coming to light, coming to court today, because that's pretty much all gone.
Yeah, well, it is. Of course, to be fair, while it was around, if there was a period where Apple was doing something wrong, even though it's been fixed, that the period of wrongdoing, alleged wrongdoing, would still be subject to civil suit of some sort.
Right, sure. As it should. That's right. Yeah.
But what's left of this case, the fair play stuff has been stripped out. What's left of this case is that Apple was trying to illegally control the digital download store market and then the digital media player market, the MP3 player market. And that has me baffled, because there has always been lots of competition in both of those markets once Apple entered them.
Even before Apple entered them, right? Apple was not the first.
Well, Apple was, that's true. Apple was not the first, but once Apple did enter them, there was tons of competition. I mean, it's like.
Can you say Zune?
Yeah. Well, there was
no, Dave, there was competition.
Oh, sorry. Head cold.
There was so many cheap MP3 players out there. So many cheap MP3 players. But the funny thing is that Apple tended to be the price leader on MP3. After a certain point, Apple became the price leader at most levels of the MP3 market. But there was still just – there was lots of competition, and there were so many stores. I linked to my ex-wife's review of Buy Music for us.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Buy Music. That was like they were going to crush iTunes.
I totally forgot.
And they had every opportunity to do so.
And they did, in fact, have every opportunity to do so for as long as they were in business. There are still lots of MP3 or lots of online music stores. But there were tons of them. Anyway, it's just – I don't understand how this has lasted this long. Apple has tried to get it squashed. They have gotten lots and lots of claims tossed out of it over the years. But it's basically an interesting combination of delays and procedural things that have kept this trial bouncing around, but it didn't go to actual trial until today.
So help me understand this here, because the claims are that Apple tried to illegally monopolize the digital media player market and online music sales, right?
Yeah, it's essentially an antitrust class action.
But how? What's the illegal part? I mean, yes, Apple tried to be the biggest, but if they didn't, there's actually fair grounds for a shareholder lawsuit, right? I mean, right. If Apple, right? I mean, you know, they got to do their level best; otherwise, they aren't serving their shareholders, and the shareholders have a right to bring action about that. So. I mean, Apple was trying to be the best at this, and the best often means we want to be the biggest, but not always, right? Because Apple has proven that they don't feel like they need to always have the largest market share. They prioritize the best products. But what is the alleged infraction here? What did they do illegally? That's the part that I'm scratching my head about. It's all because of Fair Play. Is that right?
It's not all because of Fair Play. Part of it is the way Apple used Fair Play. You know, Apple was forced by the record labels to have DRM. We know this.
Yeah,
and
right.
According to Steve Jobs, Apple did not want to have any DRM. Supposedly,
right?
Which, you know, it's always
marketing.
You always gotta you know, be careful of what Steve says. But the reality is that Apple did a great job of taking that requirement from the labels to have DRM to then lock playback of iTunes downloads to Apple devices.
And that they wouldn't license their DRM to other devices.
Correct.
That's okay. All right. Fair enough.
And, but then Apple also modified Fair Play continually to keep other people from messing with it.
If right. Because people did deconstruct it. That's right.
Yes,
right.
They did.
And like Real Networks was able to deconstruct it so that, you could actually use iTunes to download Real Network DRM songs to your iPad.
Okay, so
to your iPod.
Here we go, Brian. I buy movies from the iTunes store, right? Mm-hmm. They come with Apple's DRM. I can only play them on my Apple devices, and therefore I hate buying movies from Apple's store because I can't manage them with anything other than Apple devices.
Right.
How is that any different? Why are we not starting a class action suit about that?
Well, that's, I don't know, possibly a good question. I don't understand how this case still exists.
Now, right. It doesn't seem like this is illegal. This is just Apple's way of they're forced or want to protect the content from being copied. And heaven knows there's plenty of precedent for needing to protect that. And we could argue that that's stupid, but it's there. And so why?
Well, Apple is contractually on the hook too.
Theoretically, right.
Apple would be responsible if Fair Play got cracked and people started pirating music. At least, that's what Steve claimed.
Right. Or if you were able to pirate the movies that you get from the iTunes store.
True. But
I don't get this.
Part of this is because there's plenty of damning correspondence from Steve Jobs about using, keeping other players from being able to play iTunes downloads and keeping other music off of iTunes, that sort of thing.
With the theme of that correspondence not being we have to protect ourselves lest we get sued, instead the theme was screw those other guys, we need to win.
Yes.
How is that different from Apple keeping other companies from making Macintosh compatible hardware?
To me,
iOS compatible hardware.
The only thing that could justify these kinds of lawsuits is Apple's whole widget model being on trial.
That's an excellent point, man.
You know, and it's like, is a company allowed to have an integrated, vertically integrated, ecosystem?
And Apple isn't the only company that has a system like that. It's just they're a very prominent company with a system.
Well,
like that.
They're the only consumer company,
right?
That's doing it.
But that's can you imagine if that trial? That would be outstanding. You know, you should call Apple's lawyers and just share this podcast with them, because this might be all they need to get this thrown out. You know, Brian, you're a pretty smart guy.
Well, do you
that's remember, not just like, the cold talking.
When thank you very much. Do you remember when the EU was making all sorts of noise about Apple and DRM and forcing Apple to license Fair Play and stuff? So I mean, this sort of stuff was an issue on both sides of the pond. And I've never quite understood it, but the case does still exist. So it'll be interesting to see what's going, how it goes forward. Apple is subject to a potential of $350 million in damages.
I see this as a very fascinating snapshot in time that's just been drug along with us.
Yes,
because the issues that are the focus of this case really aren't issues anymore.
Or they are issues, and if Apple were to lose this case, it tears apart the entire infrastructure of not only what Apple does, but what happens, you know, industry-wide.
Yeah, can you imagine like Apple being somehow forced to allow iOS apps to be run on Android?
Or allow, yeah, right. Or allow iOS to be run on other hardware. I mean, where do you draw this line?
Yeah.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it will. Hey, we have a sponsor this week. And
it's, excellent.
Yes, very excellent. It's Smile and their PDF Pen Scan Plus version 1.5 for iOS. So if you're not familiar with this, what we're talking about is something that essentially turns your iPhone into a document scanner in your pocket. So so instead of having to get like really big cargo pants to carry a flatbed scanner around everywhere, you just use your iPhone. So it uses your built-in camera, snap a photo of the document, and you can delete out pages that you don't need from documents. You can crop them down to the right size. It even does OCR. So it can take a typed document and turn it into editable text. And then once you've got your documents, then you can upload them to Dropbox or iCloud so that you have them on whatever other devices you want. And it's surprisingly useful. And I've been a Smile fan for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're good. They're a good company. They make great products. They support a lot of podcasts, including this one.
They do. Yeah. Let them know you appreciate having them sponsor a show. That would be really cool.
Yeah. Good company. And good company to support.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will have a link to PDF Pen Scan Plus in our show notes for today. And if you're not sure where to find those show notes, I always include them in an article at the Mac Observer. And we also have a podcast section on the Mac Observer where you can go and find all the shows that we do. So yeah, it'll be tucked away nicely in there. So thank you to Smile for being our sponsor. And like I said, I'll have a link, and you can also check them out at smilesoftware.com. So Brian,
mm-hmm.
There's a deal that you found yesterday that has turned out to be like so amazingly cool.
Yeah, everybody seems to react the same way that I did. And it's called the OM one. I don't know how to pronounce it. OM/1, O-N-E. And it's a levitating speaker. And when we don't normally talk about deals here on TDO, but this product is so just, it's so cool.
Yeah, I need to point out what you said. Levitating speaker.
Yeah, and I think it's a deal because you thought it was so cool and convinced the folks at our deal partner, Stack Social, to let us run a deal on it.
It's true. Yeah, it was originally listed $5 off. So this thing is selling for $200 retail. and it, when it ships in January. So this is definitely still a pre-order. And when your speaker floats, apparently you don't have to discount it a lot. But
they did.
I was talking to him about that, and I was going to link to it at the Mac Observer. I was just going to link to it as a cool stuff found rather than a deal, even though the only place you can get it is through our deal site. But then when I went to go put that cool stuff found together yesterday, I saw that they had brought a week-long Cyber Monday week discount down to $179.99. So this thing for this week and this week only, probably this like period, you can get a 10% discount. It's really cool. This thing floats. It has a base that is generating some kind of magnetic field, and then the speaker floats.
So the speaker has to be charged. Is that right? Is there a battery inside the speaker? Or are they somehow pumping power through this this wireless field here too?
Oh, that would be awesome if it's doing inductive charging at the same time.
Right. Yeah, but inductive usually means touching, right? But I guess not. No.
No, you just need to be close. Yeah, you need to be in the field.
Yeah, that's right.
And if your field is strong enough to make it float, you're probably close enough for inductive charging.
I'm wondering about with this is – it looks that there are multiple grills on this. Okay. So, but it's spinning, right? And we know of at least one other spinning speaker model.
Yeah, the Leslie.
Now, it was Don Leslie's invention. But do you know why Don Leslie invented the Leslie? He didn't like the sound of the B3, the Hammond B3, because it made...
It's an organ, by the way.
Yeah, it was just an organ. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry. I got to play to my audience here. I'm used to talking to musicians about this stuff. So, yeah, it's an organ, and it's the classic organ that you're used to. But when the B3 came out, Hammond added what they called percussion. It's not actually percussion, but it's a clicky sound that happens when you push the keys down. Now, you could turn off the percussion, or you could order the M3, I believe, which was effectively the B3 without percussion. But Don Leslie decided to solve this problem a different way. He theorized that he didn't like the percussion, and he theorized that if he had two speakers, a high-end speaker and a low-end speaker, each rotating in separate directions and out of phase and at different speeds that was controllable by the organist, then it would smooth out the sound and make it so you couldn't hear the percussion.
Actually, and if, was it just the horn that spun, wasn't it?
No. The low-end speaker spins too. Oh. I believe a fixed rate.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So the organist can control the spinning. I believe the speed of the top speaker, it's either, as most organists have told me, fast or not fast. There's
right.
no real slow.
Right.
And really where that cool sound comes from is as it's accelerating and decelerating, you get this sort of interesting thing happening. And I think the other switch is to turn off the spinning of the lower speaker completely, but I may be wrong about that. But it makes my point is that the rotation of the Leslie makes for this warbling kind of fast Doppler type sound. If you've got we've all heard the train going by with the whistle and the sound changes because of the Doppler effect. The Doppler effect to the degree that it affects a Leslie, it seems would have to affect the Ohm 1, but they don't say anything about
that. Well, it's not spinning anywhere near as fast as the Leslie.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. But still, you're going to have this weird. It would have to be right that you've got a weird.
We thing need going. To sound wise. We need to test this. Now, right. The reality is that do we really need our speakers to levitate?
Well, the short answer
is yes. I guess I'm focusing
yes.
on the wrong thing here, Brian.
That's what's right. that? Yeah. Well, I was setting you up. I was setting you up because of course we need our speakers to levitate. Of course we do.
Right.
But by the way, you can hear the sound of a Leslie in the Robert Plant's vocals on What Is and What Should Never Be.
Right. Yeah. If you want to hear what it does to a not keyboard.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. Jimmy Page also played his guitar through it and something too. But anyway,
they're really cool. Heavy. I don't recommend getting one.
Not unless you're strong.
Oh my god!
Oh yeah, and the really cool
it's worse
thing
than
is
carrying drums.
They're designed to break your wrist when you hold them.
Right.
The horn in particular is designed to just like, it's a wrist snapper, total wrist snapper, that thing.
Yeah. It's a piece of furniture. It's a big wooden cabinet.
Yeah.
In fact, I was sitting next to one at an audition I went to a couple of weeks ago. And I mentioned to the, it was a, at a guitar player's house. I mentioned to the keyboard player, hey, you know, you should get a Leslie. And the guitar player points literally right next to the set of drums I was playing. And there's this, I thought it was just, it was in this guy's basement. I thought it was just like an old dresser or something. I didn't stop to think, oh yeah, it's more square than a dresser would be. So hey, he's like, right there. It was a full size Leslie. Like, wow, that's insane. Leave that here. Don't bring it to gigs.
That's not gigs awesome.
I mean, it would be awesome to have it at the gig. Just don't, let me know when it's going to arrive. And when it's going to be set up, I'll be there 10 minutes later.
See, that's smart planning right there.
There's one more aspect of the speaker. It is a mono speaker, but like Sonos, you can pair two of them to do a left-right thing. So for $400, you can have stereo levitating speakers.
That's $360 this week on the deal.
This week only.
Yep.
Wow.
Now it's possible there'll be another discount on these at some point.
Right, of course.
But like I said, when your speaker floats, you probably don't have to discount all that much.
No, you probably don't. Yeah. Hey, we are out of time. So I love that we ended up going down the Leslie speaker rabbit hole because that was just really awesome. And now I know that when someone says, "Hey, can you help me move my band kit?" And I hear they have a Leslie speaker, I'll do like you, Dave, and I'll show up 10 minutes late.
Yeah, I would actually help the guy because being a drummer, I'm sensitive to that sort of thing.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah. So thank you to Smile for being our sponsor this week. Mm-hmm. Brian, Dave, thank you for joining me today. And really, I loved the Leslie speaker talk. That was totally awesome. All right. And we will see everyone tomorrow.